Well, Nicola, it's so exciting to be in the hut itself. And the very first space that we come into is the kitchen, which I imagine was at the heart of hut life. Can you tell us a little bit about Clissold, the chef that worked here, and some of the interesting ways that he was able to use the space to make sure those men were fully fed?
He was Royal Naval Artificer, and then he trained as a chef specifically because he wanted to come on one of these expeditions down to Antarctica, but he was very young at the time. He would have made this his base in this area here. It's in the men's side of the hut. You can see in front of you the stoves that he would have used for cooking, and they would have been going constantly.
I'm looking around and there's still a lot of food here, isn't there? And in fact, I think Antarctic Heritage Trust cares for the largest single can collection in the world, over 8,000 tins, I believe. And a lot of these tins that we're looking at now, they still have food in them, don't they?
So they brought a huge range of food down with them, as I guess you would do if you're coming to Antarctica and you didn't know when you're actually going to be able to return to Britain or to civilised society. You can really break it up into dried fruit, tinned food and bottled food. But they also stopped off at New Zealand on their way down to Antarctica and picked up some fresh food from there as well. So up on the left-hand side there, you can see cheese from Geraldine that they picked up. And there are also butter boxes from along the bottom of the bulkhead there, also from New Zealand. And they're probably names that you'd recognise, like Manga Te Pere.
So if we walk over here, I'm looking at a whole shelf of preserved rhubarb, preserved cabbage, and actually you can see it says pure preserved rhubarb in chunks, no preservative or added materials of any kind, no soaking required. So it sounds like a nice, quick, easy ingredient to add to meals. Will you tell me a little bit about conserving tins like this? What sort of process would you apply to it as an artifact conservator?
Well, you can see that a lot of the tins have begun to corrode on the outside and the labels have begun to deteriorate as well. What we do is we look at the artifacts and we decide whether or not the tins are punctured or if they're leaking at all. And it's only then that we would open them up and remove the contents inside. So a lot of these cans actually still have their food products inside them because we haven't needed to remove them. We remove them if they're punctured because it means that the tin is actually corroding on the inside as well as the outside, so it's going to deteriorate really rapidly, which is what we really want to prevent. It also means that the food products inside are beginning to rot, which also aggravates the corrosion. Also, it means that if it's leaking, it can leak onto other artifacts in the hut, and there's a possibility that wildlife can be contaminated as well if they eat any of the products that are leaking out of the cans. The cans that we empty, if the products inside are in good condition, like we emptied some jam tins the other day and the products were still quite good inside, even though at the bottom it was beginning to rust, we'll take samples of those and note which tins they came from, and they're taken back to New Zealand and frozen at Canterbury Museum as a repository really of foods from this period. So in the future, if people wanted to research these products, they can do so.
The other thing that I'd sort of noticed is that there's sort of dust and soot on the artifacts, and that was left deliberately, wasn't it?
A lot of the dirt and soot on them is used in the hut. It's not something that's been acquired on the artifact since the huts were abandoned. What happened was that the Ross Sea Party, they were left here by Shackleton so that they could lay depots to the pole for his transantarctic expedition. But they were supposed to be living on the ship rather than in the hut here. So they didn't bring many supplies ashore with them apart from the supplies that they needed to depot towards the South Pole. Unfortunately, their ship was blown out to sea. You can still see the anchors outside the hut, and it wasn't able to come back for them to live on. So they were actually surviving on what they had and what they could scavenge and find around the huts. This included a lot of seal blubber, which they used to eat, and they used for cooking and for lighting as well. And the inside of the hut is stained with the soot from burning seal blubber. If you go to Discovery as well, you'll see the same staining there, which is even worse there. So it's part of the history of how the artifacts in the hut were used. So we've tried to retain that, which means that a lot of the glassware, for example, has smudges all over it. A lot of the clothing has dark smudges and stains. stains on it as well. But that makes it quite difficult because in conservation, you're really trying to remove dirt usually so that you can access areas that are corroding or deteriorating so that you can treat them. So we developed our own techniques really for dealing with that. And sometimes you had to balance the conservation requirements of the artifacts against the need to keep that history. You also see that desire to retain information on the pans that you can see in front of you, which still have food products left on them. So there's bits of fat and grease and food which hadn't been cleaned off. And that again is important information about how the artifacts were used and what they looked like at the time. So we've worked around those remains and treated the metals and the materials underneath them.
And you know, Nicola, when we first came into the hut, and I'm looking around and I see all this food that's left, sledging, expedition equipment, scientific equipment, the men's everyday needs such as beds and sleeping bags and clothes. There's 11,500 artifacts in here, and people often say when you come to the Terra Nova hut, it is as if the men have just left and will walk back in at any moment, and it certainly has that feel about it. Now, when you first arrived and you walked in as an artifact conservator and you saw just thousands upon thousands of artifacts, what was your reaction?
Well, first of all, walking into the hut, I was absolutely blown away. It's just amazing to walk in here and see so much. I really didn't expect to see that. It's like walking into just a little microcosm of English life, really. You look around and you see all the products that I recognise from my own childhood. And some of them still exist, like fries, chocolate and Coleman's flowers and birds products as well, and Jay's fluids. And some of them I looked at and I thought, yep, I know what I can do to that to treat them. But then there were a huge number of artifacts that I looked at and thought, I just have no idea what we can do to them. Partly because the deterioration was so bad, but also because I knew that the artifacts were coming back into the hut. And when you work in conservation, most of the artifacts you're working on are going into nice warm environments in museums and galleries. But the artifacts we were working on here and the objects were coming back into the hut and into this cold climate.
And Antarctic Heritage Trust were actually working on the artifact conservation for about 7 years, weren't they? And that included 12 months at a time, so summer and winter. And you've in fact had two winters with the Trust. So how did that work? Were you camping out here or were you at Scott Base? What was the setup?
No, the huts are quite remote and it's only possible to get to them during the summer period. You can't reach them during the winter because of the environment, because of the darkness and because of the sea ice conditions. So there's only a very short period that you can actually work at the huts during the summer, and it would have taken a lot longer to treat all the artifacts if we were trying to fit it into those couple of months. So what we were able to do was to work back at Scott Base. During the summer it's up to 80 people, and that includes scientists as well as base staff. But during the winter period, it's mainly the base staff. They're just the skeleton crew keeping the base running. So we were able to use one of the larger rooms on the base and convert that into a conservation studio. So during the summer, working at the huts, probably about 2,000 artifacts were packed up and then travel back to Scott Base. They were kept frozen outside in the same condition that they were taken out of the huts, and then we'd bring them into Scott Base and into the laboratory that we'd set up there and conserve them during the winter period. Then the next summer, those artifacts would go back to the hut and we would bring another batch for the next winter period to be treated. So you had this conveyor belt really of artifacts and conservation going on. That went on for about 10 years.